Glenn Coble, and you're listening to A Progressive View, or A Progressive Life, I'm sorry. And looking forward to warming up here sometime. I just checked the weather. The temperature is right now 26 degrees, and it feels much cooler than that, I'll guarantee you. I just came in the door, and I'm pretty well frozen just from the car to here. Oh, well, that's the way life is, and that's the way Ohio weather is. Ohio weather is all over the place, and it always has been. And we're hoping that we're, well, let's see, I had it figured out, and I forgot how many days away from spring we are. Well, spring is March 21st, so it's not that far away, about a month away, and I'm starting to think about what I should do with my plants. I try to grow plants indoors so they have them ready to go outdoors. And I found that I'm not a very good, I don't have much of a green thumb on the indoor stuff. I probably water them way too much. And so this year I think I'm going to go with less plants, but I'm going to buy them. I found a really good nursery where I can buy plants and they seem to live, which is something I tend to do away with when it comes to gardening. And for the last few years, I haven't gotten very many tomatoes. I've gotten some, but I put in about 6 plants and probably take out about 12 tomatoes. That's just not worth the effort. So I've got to look into my soil and find out whether I have enough fertilizer in there. I think I do things right. I put all my scraps and stuff like that into my recycling bin, let them recycle for a year, and then I dump them on my garden, but it hasn't seemed to work. Oh, well, that's a problem I have, not something that any of my listeners, I don't think you can help me unless you know how to test my soil. I'm going to test my soil this year and see if I'm way over alkaline or way over whatever the other one is, and try and do something with it. I just do it for fun anyway. I really, with only one other person at my house, and my dog doesn't eat vegetables. Well, yeah, actually she does, but not enough to make it count. She doesn't like tomatoes. Anyway, and I'm not even sure tomatoes are good for dogs, but we're going to not worry about it too much. We just do it for fun. But I'm gonna get good plants. I'm gonna go buy good plants, and hopefully they will do a better job. Hey, if you decide you want to call, the station's number is 740-383-9944. As we get closer to gardening time, maybe you can call me and give me some hints. Right now, it's a little early for that. I thought that today that I was asked by a person who listens, and thank you, by the way, for asking me, asked me on the street if I would go over the time. You know, I've been doing some personal biography stuff so you know who I am. And this person said, hey, you went to the Final Four, didn't you? And I agreed that I did. And wanted to know what happened at the Final Four, what we had to do, and when, you know, just go over some of the interesting tidbits that happened at the Final Four. And it was kind of interesting. So that's what I'm going to start out with. And then we're going to talk about, all sorts of things, socialism. Whether we are leaning towards socialism, want to talk about what our founding fathers, what their assumptions of what a good leader, good president would be. I'm going to talk about some of the tactics that all politicians seem to be using anymore, including lying. we'll touch on lots of things in the second half of the show. But the first half, we're going to talk about the Final Four that I went to. It was a long time ago, probably half of you weren't born then. Maybe more than half weren't born when I went to the Final Four. I was only, I don't know, probably 32, something like that. Anyway, oh, by the way, I still have my cold. I was new in the business of athletic administration, and my position title at the time was sports information director. A lot of people don't know that there is such a position, but the sports information director is the guy you see running up on the stage after the event is over and getting the microphones ready and making sure the coach is sitting in the right place. That's the person we're talking about. Also, these people that do sports information work, and I'm not saying this because that's where I started, but they should be, people should bow down to them. They work very hard. I have friends that are still in sports information. Most sports information directors, after you've been in it a while, you get promoted to assistant athletic director. And that's what happened to me. But anyway, I was very young, didn't have a clue what I was doing. I had only been in athletics. I went in September, right at the beginning of the school year. And basketball starts October 18th, or at least it did then. I think it still does. October 18th is when you can start practicing. And then basketball back then probably started the very last week of November and went on through, obviously, through March. And so I had been, sports information director for, what is that, September, October, November, December, January, February, March. So 7 months, okay? I had been in athletics, really fumbling my way through, but learning from some great people like Roger Valdeseri at Notre Dame and Betsy Bollebach at Marquette and Fred Stabley at Michigan State. I had some really good mentors to teach me how to move forward. And so I was working my way forward, and all of a sudden, we had a young man whose name was Mark Aguirre, and he eventually became the number one draft pick in, I think, 81. Mark was a baby at the time. He was a freshman, but he was phenomenal. And the DePaul Blue Demon were pretty good with, we had Gary Garland. Gary, by the way, is the sister of Whitney Houston and the son of Sissy Houston. And I think I told the story about him singing the national anthem for us. That was quite a thrill. We had Clyde Bradshaw. Yeah, we called him Clyde the Glide, but he was Clyde the Glide well after Clyde the Glide was Clyde the Glide. We also had a young man named Mitchum, who was our center, and a young man who was assigned probably the toughest duty of his life in our Final Four appearance to guard Larry Bird. And his name was Curtis Watkins. Great. Great young man. Not, he has passed away since then, and it's sad to know that he was fairly, well, he was young then, and I think he must have been in his early 50s when he passed away. Great, great person. Anyway, we started out, we were selected, I don't know, probably fifth seed, somewhere like that, sixth seed, in the West bracket. And we did get a bye the first round. The team that won the bye that ended up having to face us was USC. That was kind of interesting. We were at, it wasn't Poly Pavilion. It was actually at I believe it was at USC. It might have been. Anyway, we got to play them in the first round, or the second round, basically, because we got a bye. And USC was obviously the favorite. Everybody figured DePaul had no chance. And USC was the local team. They had just beaten Utah State to get to the second round. And so it was DePaul versus USC. And we were considered probably a 50-50 game there. But nobody had heard of DePaul at that time. The only thing they had heard of is our coach, who was Ray Meyer. And Ray had been there for a long time. He had coached as early as probably, I'm thinking, late 40s. And he had he was one of the winningest active coaches in America at the time. But anyway, I got to the game, and I was one of my favorite singers back then was Dionne Warwick, and she was courtside. And at this time, I had already known that she was Gary Garland, our off-guards aunt. And so I went over and introduced myself to her. We had a nice little chat before the game, and Gary came over and reintroduced her to me. And I really enjoyed the opportunity to speak with Dionne Warwick. I have no doubt that she does not remember the conversation, because it was pretty brief. It was probably about 5-10 minutes, and it was before the game. And she was more interested in watching her nephew warm up, I'm sure. But anyway, we went against USC. It was kind of fun, because I think it might have been at Pauley Pavilion, because I know there were a lot of UCLA fans there. And when the USC fans came out, all the UCLA fans raised up their credit cards, implying that the team had been purchased. And they really chastised the players from USC. And that was good for us, because we needed a little bit of an edge. Well, we got the edge that we were hoping for, and we ended up. Let's see, USC was 20-8 when we played them. We were 22-5, so we had a little bit better record. But USC played a really strong game, and we had a lot of fouls in that game. But we ended up winning with a sizable lead, 89-78, and it was the Blue Demon on to the regional semifinals. So we were going to leave Los Angeles and head to Utah, which is a state I had not been in before. Well, I had been in it, but only briefly. I knew nothing about it. We got to Utah the following weekend, and we were lucky enough, or not so lucky, to draw Marquette. Marquette had played Pacific, and Pacific was not very good. And they were seeded sixth, but they just didn't look very good. And so it was DePaul versus Marquette at the regional semifinals in Provo, Utah. Now, Utah is an interesting place. We actually spent 2 weeks there, not coming back to get our studies done. I'm sorry. Anyway, so we actually spent 3 weeks there, I believe, the kids were on break for one of the weeks, and then they got their test and information that they had to learn sent out to them. So we spent quite a long time in Utah. And Utah is an interesting state, or at least it was then. We would go on to campus to go to practice, and my roommate was the team physician, And Dr. Hamilton and I would walk across campus. We wouldn't get there quite as early as the team would get there. We'd get there before the practice started, but the team had to warm up and change and stuff like that. So we walked across campus, and Doc Hamilton liked to smoke. And he was smoking a cigarette as we crossed campus. And a lady walked straight up to him right in his face and slapped the cigarette out of his mouth and said, "Mormons don't smoke." I think that's all she said to him. And he was flabbergasted. But he understood. So he respected that. And we moved on. And that night we played Marquette. And Marquette was a pretty good team. By the time you get to the regional semifinals, most of the teams are very competitive. And we pulled off a win against them by 62-56. Marquette was a great school. I loved playing against them because Betsy Balabach, and her name has changed since, but she was the assistant athletic director in charge of sports information, and she and I were close friends. We had done all sorts of things that, because Marquette was so close to Chicago, we had played them, and we had gone to events together, and we had gone to conferences together. We had a good time. Anyway, that moved us on to the regional finals, and UCLA was playing in the regional semifinals before, and they defeated San Francisco. And I'm trying to remember who the big Cartwright was the center there, and he was a phenomenal center. UCLA defeated them pretty soundly, 99-81. So that was our pick for the regional finals. We had to play UCLA in Utah still. But one would guess that they were, well, no doubt were they were the favorite, but also they were closer to home than we were. But by then, we had started to get kind of the Cinderella story behind us, and television newscasters were eager to talk to Ray Meyer, which made my job very difficult. Getting Ray to talk to the news was a little tough to start with, but finding the time when he could was difficult. And that was true with all the coaches by then. When you get to that level, you're down to 2, 4, 6, 8. You're down to the final 8, and every coach is in demand. So that was part of my job, was to make sure that everybody who wanted to talk to him, especially the Sports Illustrated guys and the Chicago Tribune guys and the people from Los Angeles, those writers, we had to make time for him. Now, if you're in one of these tournaments, you'll find that everything's pretty well orchestrated as far as the media relations go. There are certain times that you are required to speak to the media, and there are other times that you are given blackout time where the media can't bother you. But in between, there's some vague time where you try to make sure that you have your coach put his best foot forward and speak to as many writers as you can. So anyway, we defeated UCLA 95-91, pretty close game. But that sent us on to the Final Four, which was pretty much the Final Four of all times. It held, and I'm not sure if it still holds the record for most number of people watching the Final Four, but it was DePaul versus Indiana State. And Indiana State had Larry Bird, and it was Pennsylvania, who was the Cinderella story by this point, playing against Michigan State, which had Magic Johnson. By the way, Magic Johnson was named by one of my friends that I mentioned earlier, Fred Stabley, His dad was the SID at Michigan State, and when Magic played there, Irving Johnson, when he played there, my friend was pretty young and said, he plays just like Magic, and that's where the name came from. Anyway, we had the opportunity to go against Indiana State in the Final Four. Now, the Final Four is a complete show unto itself. You don't get a lot of time to do anything but what you're supposed to do. There are people everywhere clamoring to talk to everybody. We had a player, his nickname was Peaches, Dennis Moore. And Dennis probably played no more than 5 minutes a game, maybe 10, but didn't play a lot. Even Dennis was besieged by writers that wanted to talk to him. He was also a very nice young man. Anyway, we got to the basketball arena, which was at, let's see, I'm trying to remember. It was at Utah. I'm not sure whether it was at Utah or at Brigham Young. Anyway, it was also in Utah. And started to get ready for the event. We were told where our locker room was. We got in. That's kind of an interesting story, too, how you get in. Sometimes you better stay with the team or they won't let you in. So, but anyway, they're pretty strict with their credentials. We were told where our locker room was, so we all started walking towards our locker room, and we were stopped by a policeman who said, we've changed your locker room, and our coach asked why we had changed. Well, Larry Bird had decided that he was going to cause too much of a distraction to the rest of his team if he didn't have a locker room to himself. So they gave him a locker room by himself, and that was the locker room we were supposed to be in, so we had to move. So we did move, and the night before we went to the Final Four, Curtis Watkins, who was the young man who was supposed to guard Larry Bird, wrenched his knee in practice. Now, that's the last person in the world you want to have wrench a knee, but he did, and he was about 80%, and that led to kind of an interesting evening where the head coach wanted our team physician to shoot the knee up so he wouldn't feel the pain right before the game, and our doctor refused to do that, saying that would leave Curtis in a position where he wouldn't know if he was hurting and would play when the knee had been severely injured, and so he would not do it. So anyway, Curtis did play, and he guarded Larry Bird, and I think Larry Bird had his best night ever. I think he missed one, maybe two shots the entire game because Curtis couldn't get up like he normally did, and Larry was, probably 6'9", and Curtis was 6'5". And Curtis could out-jump Larry Bird without any trouble if his knee had been okay. But as it was, Larry Bird had pretty much a cakewalk. But the rest of our team played extremely well, and the final score of that game was 74-78. No, I'm sorry, 74-76. If Larry had missed one more shot, we would have been in overtime. It was a phenomenal game. I really believe that if Curtis had been okay, DePaul was the better of the two teams and would have beaten Larry Bird long before he got to meet up against Magic the next night. The final game ended up a Magic 75, Bird 64, and so it was not as close as people thought it might be, but Magic was phenomenal. He had I can't remember the his off forward Jay. Yeah, it doesn't make any difference. Anyway, it was a phenomenal game. I got to watch through that. Actually, before that game, they had a national third place game, which DePaul did win, but we barely squeaked by a not so good Pennsylvania team, 96-93. Excuse me. The Pennsylvania team, we actually led them at halftime by probably 15 points. They were not terribly good, but our kids were kind of wrung out from the day before playing against Michigan State, and they were also just assumed it was one of those games where you just walk over to the arena and throw your hat in the ring and you win. It was not that easy. So anyway, that happened to be, and I think it still is, the highest watched game, semifinal game in the history of the Final Four. And the reason why that is not too long after that they quit doing a third place game. But we ended up being the third place team, and it was kind of fun. All sorts of things happened at those games, though. There were well over 200 writers and television people, and just keeping yourself under control. In my position, keeping myself under control, because I had no idea what I was doing there. I did a good job, I guess. I was told later I did a good job, but I did it out of fear rather than out of knowledge. And we got through that. And the neat thing about going to the Final Four that early in my career, it pretty much made my career. I spent the next 5 years at DePaul. A new AD came to town, and as you probably know, when a new AD comes to town or a new president comes to town, quite often the athletic departments are adjusted, and I was adjusted. But I was lucky enough. I had already been I had already been contacted by Ohio University. They wanted to hire me, and they brought me down a lot higher salary, and at the position of assistant athletic director, and had a good 12, 13 years at Ohio University before a new president decided to do away with some staff. Anyway, that was the fun part. Anybody that has children that want to get into athletics, I encourage it. It will require they work their little tushies off. I think I mentioned before I had 1 week where we did the women's NCAA and the men's NIT game at our arena at OU within a day of each other. And that week I worked 108 hours. Now, that's not normal. I mean, you don't normally work 108 hours, but you normally work during the seasons. You normally work 60 hours, if not 70 hours, and you don't get paid by the hour. Anyway, let's go over and talk about some of the things that are going on in our world right now. I had been talked to by several people about what does it require to be a good leader, a good president, I did some research, and I found an interesting article that talked about what Alexander Hamilton felt a good leader or a good president would be. And it really kind of, I think it's what most people thought presidents would be up until our most recent president. Alexander expected a president to prepare himself. That was the very first thing. He says you don't win a race if you haven't put time in running. So in other words, you had to get ready, and you had to talk to people. You had to listen to people. you had to run for the position. And so preparing yourself was number one in Alexander Hamilton's list of things. And he lists seven things that he thought you had to be a good leader or a good president. Now this one, I'm just going to say what it is. Exemplify moral integrity. I don't care if you're on the right side of the aisle or the left side of the aisle. I'm sure you can think of presidents that have not lived up to that. As a matter of fact, the president from right here in Marion, Ohio, was not known as a person of high integrity. He was known to have several mistresses, both before and during, and I don't know about after. He was never tried on it, so we don't know for fact. But he was not known to have high moral integrity. Another, and obviously the current president was, 20 people accused him of sexual abuse. We all know that Clinton had his problems with sexual abuse. Even Kennedy, one of our revered presidents, was known to be kind of a philanderer. It seems to be, I told my wife a long time ago that the reason why, and I was talking about men, would run for positions is for the money, the power, and the sex. And I also pointed out to her it was probably not in that order. So I still go with that. I think a lot of people get into the... Now, when I ran this last term, I was not running for any of those. I was running because I, as kind of a protest against the current administration, but also because I believed people wanted to hear the truth and would vote for somebody that would tell them what he believed or she believed, despite what they believed. And I truly believe there's room for politicians like that, and maybe more room now than we had before the era of the current president. The next thing on Alexander Hamilton's expectation list was go beyond self-interest. Well, that speaks directly to the emolument thing that so many people are talking about our current president. Obviously, if you're going to continue to make money and continue to and actually make money because you're a president, you haven't gone past your self-interest. I'm not going to try to say that all of our presidents have gone past their self-interest, but that is the third thing that Alexander Hamilton expected. And meanwhile, Hamilton and the other members that were writing the Constitution and were writing all the different basis for our government, this is what they all believed. Now, some of them believed it one way or another, but they all had these basic goals and basic moral values in their heads when they were thinking of how a good government would run. They also, the next thing was establish clear goals. Now, I think a lot of people, a lot of successful people, establish clear goals, and I would imagine that you would say that most of our presidents have done that. And a lot of them develop these clear goals by having people around them that know where we need to go to get what we want to get done. Next thing was respect for your people. And I think he meant in this when he said respect for your people, I think it not only meant your constituents, but I think it meant the people that work for you, directly for you. And that is important. Respect for all people should be, I think, at the top of your list of expectations for our leaders. Then one thing that there's a lot of talk about this, but I'm not so certain that a lot gets done about this. Convey an inspiring vision. there's constant talk about vision that people have. But I think most people would agree with me that a lot of the visions that they espouse to are political visions. They're things that they think their constituents want to hear. I want a, you know, a chicken in every pot and all that sort of thing. And even though they know it's not feasible, or, you know, we're having a lot of discussion about, all sorts of things that we can't possibly afford, but we want it for, so we will tell our constituents that we're going to provide that for them. That's why I truly believe that if you're a political person, or if you want to have some knowledge when you go to the polls on election day, make sure you read stuff about all the people that you're going to vote for, and make sure that you're critical, because I don't care if you're independent, Democrat, or Republican, there are people that will tell you what you want to hear, not what you need to hear. And there are people that will tell you they'll give you the moon, but you'll find out you're not going to get anything because you don't have a lobby. So be very critical about what they say they're going to do. Listen behind the words. And there are people that are really good at making it sound honest when in fact it isn't. So be very critical of all of our politicians. And the last thing that Hamilton felt the president should be, or the any leader should be, is a mentor. And that's kind of interesting. I was surprised when I read that. If you're a president, of course you're going to be a mentor. Just because of your position, people are going to look at you as the leader. They're going to think of you as somebody that has a lot of knowledge. But part of being a mentor is directing people and teaching people and helping people move ahead. If you can't do that, you are not a very good mentor. So those are the things that Mr. Hamilton believed, and many of our founding fathers believed should be in the president's bailiwick. Another question that I was asked this week: do you think we're moving towards socialism? Well, socialism is one of those words that has lots of hidden meanings to it. A lot of people, when they hear the word socialism, they think communism. Well, it's not even close. But they associate it with Marx, and they associate it with the people, the people of that ilk. But it was interesting. I was listening to a show this past week, and a gentleman was talking about socialism, and he said the biggest the biggest organization that is socialistic currently is the NFL. And I thought, how in the world can you say that? Then he started pointing out how the players are paid huge amounts of money, but they're paid because cities pay for their arenas that they play in. Politicians pay for all sorts of stuff that go along to get football teams to come to their town under the guise that if Marion brought in an NFL team, Marion would become the biggest town in Ohio. Might be true. I don't know. And we did have a professional team a long, long time ago in the area. Anyway, I think it's interesting. I also have had ministers tell me that Jesus Christ was the original socialist. Well, he had socialistic ideas. He believed in giving to the poor. He believed in taking care of your neighbor. He believed in helping others. Those are all socialistic ideas. But I also think there were other ideas that he had that were probably more, they weren't capitalistic, I will say that. One of the things I was thinking about this while I was going over in my mind the socialism question, I've learned an awful lot of things as I've gotten older. And many of the things I thought were very important as a young man, like whether I had hair or whether I was dressing in style, many of those things that I thought were very, very important, at my age, I've found out that those aren't at all important. The things that seem to me to be important is the quality of my character. And I don't think I worried too much about that. I tried being a minister's kid. You kind of are in the spotlight all the time, so you have to at least look like you have character. And so I think I tried, but I don't think I even thought about character as one of the prime things that I wanted to get when I was very young. One of the things, since this program discusses our moving forward as opposed to moving backwards, I was thinking that we should constantly push the boundaries of our human knowledge. If we do not do that, we will inevitably go backwards. And one of the things that I really am worried about right now is the fact that a certain group, a rather large group of Americans, don't believe there is such a thing as global warming. And I know at 26 degrees outside, it sure doesn't feel like it. But global warming is a climate thing, not a weather thing. And the warming, we continue, I think in the last 15 years, 14 of them have been the warmest years on record. And I think this past year was as well. It's saying something. And a lot of people want to cast that off as we have ups and we have downs. Well, we can test why we're having this global warming now by testing the types of chemicals that we put into the air and how we stop the movement of the air. And well, if you ever sit in a car when it's 90 degrees outside and you leave all the windows rolled up, you're going to find out what local global warming means. You know, one of the things Fred Rogers said, I was watching a documentary on Fred Rogers, and he said, "My mother used to say, always look for the people who are helping." Isn't that a wonderful thing to say? And that's why being a progressive, most progressive people you will find want to help other people. And that's kind of why I lean that direction. Not that I'm the greatest gift, but it's just part of my upbringing that I want to help other people. I really enjoy helping other people. And I hope that everybody can get to feeling that way. I was going to bring up today some of the things that I'd like to see us do that might change our attitudes, and one of them was requiring having the law require that all content be factual that you're looking at. Have you ever noticed how some of the ads that you'll see on TV and in magazines and newspaper, some of them have such small print that you can't read them, period. You just can't read them. If I would like to see them have a law that says, if you can't understand all that, then, or you can't read it, or you can't understand what they're talking about, you shouldn't put it in and you shouldn't advertise it. It's really an attempt to kind of fool those of us who are trying to be critical in our listening. Well, it's getting pretty long along the way here. I only have a few more seconds, and I hope you had a good day. I hope you had a good day so far. I hope it warms up soon. And I hope you enjoyed the program. We will be back next Monday with a Progressive View. I'm Glenn Coble, your host.
You're listening to WWGH Radio, LP, Marion, Ohio, 107.1 FM, The Talking Place. From legendary talk show host, actor, broadcaster, and comedian, Charles Grodin.
You know what I'm impressed by? You think I would know this, how you have all this audio.
Oh, you're impressed by this?
Well, what do you do, just tape the shows as they go? But you're going back 10 years now, or maybe longer in certain cases.
Charles, when you were on, I made sure to tape it.
Wow, isn't that something? Where are you from originally?
I'm right here in Ohio.
Where? No, I mean, you weren't born where you're working now, or were you?
Do you work for the Internal Revenue Service or something?
I refuse to answer on the grounds.
Yes, I was born right here, Charles. I never went anywhere.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And you like it?
Sure.
Yeah, I liked it too. So how long have you had this show?
This show?
Yeah.
This particular incarnation of this show has been on about a year, but doing these type of shows about 10 years.
10 years. And
is that good enough? Do I pass?
Oh, yeah. And you enjoy it, right?
Till today, yeah.
Well, you know, there's nothing like, for someone like you or someone like me, somebody who likes to talk, radio's the place.
That's true, until you're doing live radio at 110,
yes,
and you make a call.
Yeah, the guy doesn't call you back.
Oh, and you've advertised it.
Oh, you've advertised it.
You start to panic.
You do start to panic, yeah.
Now, are you going to stay up tonight and watch the final show?
No.
No.
But nothing against him. I'm just not awake at that hour, and you know, and I'm thrilled to be in the, I think you said, Pantheon.
Can't you get some coffee tonight, Charles? 33 years.
No.
No. Not even a shot, huh?
No, I mean, I could get coffee, but I wouldn't do it. I could always get a copy of the show. Because I know people, you know.
Well, you're going to, yeah, you know people, but you're going to miss it. You know, you'll have to read about it. You won't get to see it live or tape live.
Well, someone will read it to me.
Read it to you. Okay.
To alter ego of legendary comedian Andy Kaufman, lounge singer Tony Clifton.
It's close to 1 o'clock here, close to 10 o'clock there.
Yeah.
And
well, that's okay. I don't have a gig tonight. So
and you got to make a Letterman.
If I want a drink, what's the problem with you if I want a drink?
What's no, I have problem? No problem with it, Tony.
No, you got a problem.
I got no problem.
No, you're hinting that I shouldn't be drinking this early in the morning.
No, Tony.
What are you, a priest or
something? No, Tony, you drink when you want to drink. You want to drink
you.
At 10 in the morning,
you
drink.
I deserve it. I'm at the age now. I ain't going to stop that. Stop to say my liver's gone.
Your liver's gone. Please calm down, Tony. That temper of yours.
WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM, Marion, Ohio. The Talking Place. Streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com. Look for us on Facebook by searching WWGH Marion, Ohio, 107.1 FM, and clicking like for exclusive content. Programming on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM is supported by CRT Mechanicals. Address 2842 Marion Waldo Road.
telephone number 740-225-4495, webpage crtmechanicals.com. Thomas Lawn Service for all your lawn care and landscaping needs. Telephone number 740-751-1783. The WWGH Radio prize policy is as follows. You have 10 days from the day you win the prize to pick the prize up. You can only win once every 30 days. WWGH Radio staff reserves the right to question any and all prize winnings. The WWGH offices are open Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. for prize pickup. The WWGH offices are located at 559 East Center Street in the lower level of the Belltone Building. Thank you so much for playing fair.
This is Patty Wooster with Marion Midget Football, a staple of the Marion community for over 45 years, providing sportsmanship, friendship, and exciting competition. To our Marion youth, 740-382-4558.
Hey everybody, it's Pastor Steve Whitaker from the Pastor Spot. We are on every Tuesday at 5:15 and replay again on Wednesday at 3:15. We take pertinent issues of the day going on and look at them in a biblical perspective. So we'd love to have you listen and just, you know, call in, just get a conversation going and have a great time on the show.
Pastor Steve Whitaker is the pastor at Community Christian Fellowship in Prospect, Ohio. Address 209 East Water Street. Programming on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM is supported by Affordable Event Games, LLC. Address 141 South Main Street. Telephone number 740-262-6050. Facebook Affordable Event Games. This is Scott Spears looking down on the beautiful city of Marion from the WWGH News Chopper. If you would like to ever submit a news tip or an event to the WWGH News Department, email Scott at WWGH1071.com and watch out for the chopper. Vanover Village Townhouses, located in Marysville, now renting 2 and 3 bedroom townhouses. Telephone number 937-642-3692.
This is Charlie Evers, and you're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, streaming live on the internet at www.wwgh1071.com. Find us on Facebook by searching WWGH Marion, Ohio, 107.1 FM, and clicking like for exclusive content.
Talking Points with Seth Schollinger on WWGH Radio 107.1 FM is supported by Moral Companies, LLC, leading the way with quality and service. Telephone number 1-800-554-3981, website moralcompanies.com, address Moral Location, 132 Postal Avenue, P.O. Box 26, Moral, Ohio, 43337, Caledonia Location, 1592 Columbus Sandusky Road North, Caledonia, Ohio, 43314, celebrating 55 years of service. Meadows Lawn Care and Landscaping is a proud supporter of WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, Marion, Ohio. Telephone number 740-262-5638. Email meadowslawncare43302@gmail.com. Creating unique environments. Facebook, Meadows Lawn Care. The Marion Towers Apartments are a supporter of WWGH Radio 107.1 FM. Address 400 Delaware Avenue. Phone number 740-387-9050. It's now time for the obituary report on WWGH Radio.
Harold L. Potts, age 77, of Marion. passed away on February 11th. He is survived by his sons, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, cousins, nieces, and nephews. Visitation will be on Saturday, February 23rd at the Snyder Funeral Home, Denzer Chapel, 360 East Center Street in Marion, 1 to 3 p.m. A celebration of life service will follow at 3. You may leave an online condolence at SnyderFuneralHomes.com for Harold L. Potts of Marion. Susan K. Weiss, age 64, of Marion, passed away on Tuesday, February 12th at the Marion General Hospital. She is survived by her sons, her brothers, her sister, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. Friends and family may come to honor Susan's life on Monday the 18th from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Boyd Bourne Funeral Home. A funeral service will start at 1 p.m. at the funeral home. Burial will follow